So this is why sharp seeds were so big in the 18th century. They were the first people to sell seeds to America. I've got documents from their company turning over 1.2 million in the 18th century.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticulture consultant, and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty.
Morning, Phil.
Hi there, Kate. Happy New Year.
Oh, my goodness me. Yes, Happy New Year. Made any resolutions this year?
Oh, this time next year, I'm going to be a millionaire.
Well, my resolution is hopefully for the whole country, and that is for us to have more sunshine, please.
Oh, well, that would be very nice. A summer.
A proper summer, less rain and a lot less wind. Goodness me, what a lot of damage has been caused this winter. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Anyway, so let's be cheery and talk about our next guest. I hope you're on your best behaviour.
Oh, I should try.
Because we are going to be talking to Lady B. Also, I should say, Sam Cook, who is the, well, she calls herself head gardener of Bardney Manor, but actually there's a lot more to her than just head gardener. So going to be really exciting to talk to her. There's loads and loads of stuff going on in her life and her garden. So I don't want to say too much before we actually get to chat to her. But I think she's going to be somebody that a lot of listeners will really love hearing all about her story, the J word, the journey. Really looking forward to this. So you don't know much about Sam, do you, Phil?
I don't, but I do know that all the best things come from Lincolnshire.
Oh my goodness, absolutely.
Because that's where I'm from.
Oh really?
Yeah, I was born in Lincoln.
Did not know that. Oh my goodness, we've been talking about Lincolnshire because Lincolnshire is the kind of horty mecca of the UK. We've been talking to so many different people from Lincolnshire.
Amazing.
But then it has been, you know, it's been the most amazing fertile soil. In fact, I was watching a program about the Great Storm of 1947 because that's how that's how exciting I am. And they talked about Lincolnshire because they had massive flooding once all the snow had melted, and the dikes broke, and they had to get in specialist help from the Netherlands because it was where all our food was grown.
Yeah.
And so actually we think about Dig for Victory being really, really important, but during that time, just after the Second World War, everybody was being encouraged to grow their own food because of the problems Lincolnshire had. But Lincolnshire has always been the kind of mecca for growing food. So there we go, a little history.
You're a mine of information there, Kate. That's fantastic.
Just trying to put into context why Lincolnshire, apart from just being flat, has been so important for growing. It's the soil.
Right. Well, on that note, why don't we crack on and have a chat with Sam?
Absolutely.
So on the Underground this week, we are delighted to be welcoming Sam Cook. Welcome, Sam.
Hello.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. So I'm Lady Bardney and I live at Bardney Manor. And I'm probably the only custodial of a manor house who actually is the head gardener.
Wow. So you are actually Lady Bardney. That's not just a handle, or that is your official, so you're Lord and Lady of the Manor.
Yeah. So my husband is Lord Bardney. Yeah.
Amazing. Should we be saying your honour or your highness or something?
And I suppose you don't get many of these establishments, manor houses, where you have the head person, lady, as the gardener. But because I am a gardener, then I do garden every single day, regardless. So the connection. So obviously we came here 3 years ago. We were up towards the other end of Lincolnshire, and we were selling off where we were up there. It wasn't a huge farm, but it was a big small holding. We had a 3-acre wildflower meadow and lots of lands. And we wanted to downsize. It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? And we found this place, and we didn't actually know what we'd found, you know, until actually we came here, and then everything just started unfolding. It was unbelievable.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
So the manor was once home to the renowned John Sutton Sharp. Can you tell me a bit about him and whether there are any remnants or inspirations from his work that influence your restoration efforts now?
Yeah, so Craigie, John Sutton Sharp, his father first, John Senior Sharp, started the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, was obviously the Sharp seeds industry. They were one of the biggest seed merchants in the 18th century. They invented the Sharp Express potato, which you can still buy today, and the Wonder Pea. John's dad wrote most of the legislations that were in Parliament in the 18th century for seeds. They were a very well connected family. And then the elder son, John, was a bit slightly more flamboyant. Him and his brother Charles were running the operation after their dad, you know, passed it on to them. And they kind of fell out because John was doing all sorts of things. He also went off with Marion, and he left the establishment and came to Barney to set up his own enterprise here.
Right.
Rival his brother.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so... So they were, the brothers themselves and the father, they were absolutely the pioneers of seeds in the 18th century, along with Suttons, because John's mum was Catherine Sutton, and she was the sister of John Sutton, who started Sutton Seeds.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
This would make a great mini-series, wouldn't it?
Do you know, Kate, when we've been doing the research and we've been looking into, you know, who was doing what, everybody's name the same. So it's been slightly difficult. You know, which John was that, the first, the second or the third?
Gosh, incredible.
Yeah. So how much of that did you know before you actually moved into the property then?
Zero.
Really? So it's just coincidence?
Yeah. Honestly, we looked at it. So we came in 2021 and I was going off to Birmingham to do BBC Garden as well. I was in my show garden.
Oh, yes.
And we came and we looked at it and I said, that's a nice garden. It's got a wall. There's walls. It looks lovely. Can't remember much about the house. And off I went. You know, I was more concerned about, you know, the show garden. But I knew it was grade two listed. I knew it was a manor house and that's all I knew. Until obviously at night time when you've got lots of time to do things and you're not sat in the pub, I was researching who the heck is John Sharp.
Amazing.
How fascinating. And for you with your horticultural, you know, work to come, obviously it was meant to be, wasn't it? It was meant to be. And I love the fact that a lot of gardeners I talk to, when they move houses, they don't care. It's not the house, it's the garden. The house could be falling down, rising down from mould, as long as it's got a garden with a wall.
But the funny thing was when I was in the evening researching what this whole entity was here, you know, with the custodials of the manor and the gardens, when I was talking to people, it was Professor David Stevens who actually put me on the path of saying, this is, you know, who John Sharp is. Because ironically, David did a show garden in, I think it was 1980, I'm going to say five, it could be two, I might be wrong on the dates there. But it was an Anderson shelter and in the garden were all sharp vegetables and Sutton flowers. So that then led to David coming here and designing the kitchen garden for us.
Oh, goodness. Amazing.
So it was through I'm going to say the elders' knowledge, you know, David and various other people who I've spoke to who have got establishments that they set the path for us to, you know, to create the gardens and start restoring them, open them up to the public.
So maybe it might be an idea for you just to tell us about what the state the garden was in when you moved in and what your plans were then and what they are now.
To see flowers. When we came here, there was only the native, there was only the shrubs and trees here. There wasn't anything. Right. Honestly, right. The previous owners were going to turn it into a nursing home and the kitchen garden was going to be built on. So they'd taken away all the naturalized crocuses and snowdrops. So when I asked, what will I see in February and March? And the response was, well, not much. I was quite, I'm going to say depressed, because you know there was nothing here. So the 3 years we've spent here, we've put everything back into the garden. Yeah.
So you've done some research, quite a bit of research by the sounds of it, on, you know, the history of the manor and the gardens there and that side of things. Has that influenced how you're approaching things at all?
Yeah, it has, Phil, because when you open your garden up and people perceive it to be a historical establishment and so on, you have to then, when I talk about the front gardens, I always say to people, I plant for the people, for what they expect to see here. You know, if it was up to me, it'd be a tropical garden, but you can't do that because I have to plant for what people would expect to see here. So we've got the perennial border, we've got the cutting border, we've got plants for shade and so on and so on. So we've created these environments and areas because that's what people would expect to see, and the rose walk. They wouldn't expect to come here and see, you know, big banana plants and various other things. So we've had to be very sympathetic to what would have been here and doing the research on what types of flowers were growing here when John was here. So we've tried to implement that back into the scheme.
Right. So that the manor is actually open to the public, is it, or the gardens?
The gardens are open to the public, yes. And then we open up the manor once a year for an art exhibition for people to come into the hallway and dine in. Yeah.
But there was no kind of restrictions. You could have just been a modern couple, not interested in gardening, and you could have just done what you wanted, turned the kitchen garden into a swimming pool, tennis court. There were no restrictions, or were there actual restrictions on what you could do?
Yeah, it's grade two listed. It's all listed grade two. So we have to, and the heritage people, so yeah, because it's listed on English Heritage, the garden and the house. So
the garden is as well. Right?
Yeah, there's a gateway that goes into the church that's on there. And because the wall is pre-17th century in the kitchen wall garden. So just going back to the house and gardens, the house was built in the middle of the 17th century from bricks from Tattersall Castle. So Lord Willoughby lived here before John Sharp, and he was the general for Oliver Cromwell. So he actually built the manor. So that's why it's grade two listed. So we did have restrictions in you know, you couldn't stick a solar panel anywhere. Or, you know, right. It's all had to be, it's all being done sympathetically and put back how it should have been.
But you only moved there, was it 3 years ago, you said?
Yeah.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. And you're already open to the public for the gardens. I mean, that's quite going some, I would say.
Well, Phil, okay, the reason why we've done this is I want people to come on the journey with us. I think it's really good for gardeners to come when you start at the beginning. Normally when you go to a garden, it's finished, or it's never finished, but it's a stage where it's semi-complete. And I wanted to bring people in while we were doing things, so they could say to us, well, why are you doing that? Why are you planting that there? So the garden then becomes an educational journey for them.
Right.
That's answering one of my questions further down the line. So that's really good. So it's like, how do you see its story inspiring the future generations of gardening? And you've answered that. I think that's brilliant, isn't it? That people get to come with you on the journey and learn themselves. That's wonderful.
Yeah, because I'd spent my childhood going around gardens, and you never knew why that particular plant was planted there or why they'd done something in the garden. You know, it had a name, it had an avenue or so on. But I wanted people to come here and know why we'd actually planted that. And there's a proportion of the plants here in the garden that have been gifted to us from other people's gardens. So you talk about Jane.
And that's Jane Hickling, isn't it?
It is Jane Hickling, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jane's mother sadly passed away, and Jane's mother's garden was beautiful. And Jane brought me all her mum's hollyhock seeds, and in the garden are the hollyhocks.
Oh, how beautiful.
So all the plants have a connection to Lincolnshire or people who have been to the garden or donated them to the garden.
That's really beautiful. I really like that.
I wonder whether you could do me a favour, Sam. Do you think you could just take us on a virtual tour of the garden? Yeah, just describe the different parts to the garden, and you know, maybe tell us how large it is and that side of things.
Okay, so you come in the big main front gates and you're directly coming into a path. There's an avenue of yew and laurel trees, because obviously holly trees, they were planted there because they welcomed you into the manor. To the right-hand side is one of the original glasshouse frames of the glasshouses, which were 3/4 of a mile long.
What?
And there's a vine in there and a fireplace outside. So the original feature is there still.
Goodness me.
If you come round to the end of there, there's a huge monkey puzzle tree that's about 150 years old. Wow. Then the entrance, then the entrance to the church, which is guarded by griffins. So the church is grade one listed, built from bricks from the Abbey at Bardney. Then if you go off down to the right, this is when you come into the garden itself, there's the cutting border. So there's everything in there from grasses to different flowers, perennials that you could use to put in your house and dry and so on. You go down the ladies' rose walkway, which are all David Austin roses named after ladies. And you've got the perennial border, which goes onto the back of the wall, and the back of that wall are all the columns for the chimneys that used to heat that wall, and there's the gardener's house in the wall still. And then we've got a small woodland area with native woodland plants. You skirt back round again into a circle. There's shady plants in a planted area underneath trees. And then if you walk back down the path by doing like a figure eight, you then get to some big gates, and then that's when you go into the kitchen garden. And the kitchen garden is just under 2 acres.
Oh, goodness.
My word.
You've got a lot of work cut out for you there. How amazing.
I'm never one to blow my own trumpet, because I'm quite, I'm not like that, Kate. But when people come here and they see the garden, they say to me, you have done an incredible amount in 2 years, because there's only myself, Matthew, who comes on a Wednesday. And I have one volunteer who comes 4 hours a month.
That's it. My goodness me. I think you're allowed to blow your own trumpet. This is what you're here for. Blow your own trumpet. That sounds amazing. And with all the other things you do connected to the house, the garden, and well, we'll talk more about what other things you do later on. Oh, Phil, I think I know where we're going for our summer trip.
Do you know what? I was just thinking exactly the same thing, Kate.
And you can come and stay, because we have an Airbnb here as well.
It just sounds amazing, doesn't it? Well, we've got lots of people to visit up in Lincolnshire, including Jane Hinkling, but there seems to be lots of Taylor's bulbs are up there. There seems to be lots of horticulture going on in Lincolnshire, and we have talked about doing a trip up there, haven't we, Phil?
So you mentioned the kitchen garden. It's a 2-acre site. I mean, that's huge, really, for a kitchen garden, isn't it? So what do you do with all the produce? Because you can't eat all of that, surely.
So we only started the kitchen garden in February, March this year. Because we let it overgrow for a whole year, because I wanted to see if anything came up, if there was anything native in there or different specimens, because it had not been touched for over 200 years. Nothing's been grown in that garden for such a long
200
time.
200 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
it was like Aladdin's cave. So I was very careful in what we did in that kitchen garden the first year, because I knew there might be some seeds of certain things in there. Mm. We did find a few varieties of things which were quite uncommon, I would say. Mm. One was a hairy lettuce. Didn't look like a lettuce. It was about 6 foot tall, and it bled like a euphorbia. It had a dark stem.
Oh, really?
And when you broke the stem of the plant and the milk sap came out, if you were to dry that white sap, it was more potent than opium, and the monks used to use it as one a medicinal herb. So it was quite ironic that everything that was growing in the kitchen garden was of a medicinal sense. So we only started it February, March this year, and we kind of did no dig to trial out no dig on there, because I didn't want to disturb the soil and everything underneath. Yeah. And then we've just had our first year of growing everything. So this year we just grew it for ourselves, but going on to next year and beyond, we will be selling the produce. And right. I don't know if you're aware, but the kitchen garden is going to be turned into a horticultural learning centre. That's the whole reason for building the kitchen garden.
We're not aware, but obviously that, yes, that's going to be one of our questions. What are you looking forward to? So maybe we'll save that for a bit later on. That sounds amazing. Can I just ask you, you say it's a walled garden. What state was the wall, were the walls in when you took it out? Is it all completely walled, the whole 2 acres?
No, there's a wall down the left-hand side, and then there's a smaller wall to the right-hand side. But so what happened to the estate when John died? The estate was split and sold up, as most estates are. The actual wall garden was probably one of the biggest ones in the 18th century. It was 8 acres. It was huge.
What?
Yeah.
Goodness.
When we looked at the sale records of when John owned it and when Lord Willoughby owned the estate, it was 356 acres. It was huge.
That's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, And over the years, the village has expanded from obviously losing land and so on. So, I'm glad we've not got that much now, though. But, yeah, it's still enough.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely wouldn't be needing to do that on your own, would you?
I think you might have to have a few more people helping you out there, Sam, definitely.
So, Sam, as well as the work you're doing as head gardener at the manor, you're also a seed guardian. Can you explain what that actually means and, why it's important?
Correct. Well, we've dealt with seeds since the pagan times. Seeds are actually more important than money. So this stems from my mum and my grandparents. They always collected seeds. They never actually bought seeds. So I grew up collecting seeds and knew how to identify different seeds from vegetables, flowers, and so on. So a seed guardian basically is someone who protects, a species from disappearing. So my forte, I suppose, would be wildflowers, native Lincolnshire wildflowers. So when I set up my bespoke little seed company called Seedology, that's what I specialised in is native wildflowers, because I had a 3-acre native wildflower meadow where I could collect the seeds from. And then that stemmed into, your normal things that people would be looking for, digitalis, violas, gypsophilia, and so on. But I've always collected seeds, and that's then progressed into the work that I do with the Hardy Plant Society. Right. I sort seeds out for them and so on. That's been the journey throughout my life is collecting seeds. It's something I've done and I've not been conscious about it, but how important it is massively.
Is there a particular flower that is kind of, when you think of Lincolnshire, that's the one that you would save? A specific wildflower to Lincolnshire that maybe I might not get down here in Devon.
Yeah, that's the common dog violet. So that's native to Lincolnshire. It doesn't smell like the normal viola. It's more of a woodland, and it's slightly bigger in its head size, deep purple. And that's one of our native Lincolnshire plants, because every county has a native plant. So where I was born in South Yorkshire, it's the harebell. And when you look back at how the landscapes used to be, that then deciphers what native, wildflower plant you would have. So the common dog violet here in Lincolnshire, it was marshlands, Lincolnshire fens and so on. So it liked that environment. So that would be the one that I would say I would save, because obviously it's native to Lincolnshire and not many people actually know about it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful wildflower. Really is.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. So do you still, because you used to run seed saving workshops, is that something you still do?
Yes, that's something we still do here. So in August, harvest time, I do workshops here, and people come into the garden and I show them where seeds are, because not everybody knows where a seed is on a flower. Most of them are amazed when I say to them that, well, that's the seed there. And I show them how to collect the seed and what we do with the seed afterwards. And identify the seed and how to sow them in the garden and store them and so on. So, I'm still really avid in doing the seed workshops, because that's really important.
And have you got a couple of top tips maybe for any listeners who would like to try and save some seeds?
Make sure it's a dry day. My first top tip. Do not pick seeds when they're wet. Second one is people always ask about drying them, but you can dry them. You can get the little bags of silica gel that you have in your shoe boxes. Yes. Or you can blind bake some rice in the oven and then put it into a little bag. And put that in the jar with the seeds, and the rice absorbs all the moisture. It's a cheap and effective way of doing it, and you can reuse it again and again and again, because you just put it back in the oven, blind bake it, put it in a little muslin bag and put it in your jar with seeds.
I love that. Oh, I like that. And then I suppose they'll last indefinitely, will they, the seeds in that kind of storage?
As long as they're in a dark, environment, an environment that's not damp, then yes. And, the last, you can have put them in a jar or you can put them in a paper bag, just so there's no moisture that gets in there, no light, because as soon as there's light and moisture, they start to grow. So
that's not what you want.
That's not what you want.
Thank you.
No. So you're very active on social media. How useful has that been for telling the story of Bardney Manor for you?
It's been massive because nobody knew it was here. Even people in the village didn't know it was here. I'm going to tell you a quick story about Tony Green. So Tony Green is in his 90s. And when I came here, I went down the road by the post office. There was a trio of three old gentlemen sat there. And I said to them, "We've just bought the manor. Would you like to come and have a look and see what we're doing?" And one of them, Tony, was the historian for the village. He was, in his early 90s. So he came along up with the other two chaps. I showed them around, told them what we were going to be doing, and they were absolutely in awe, in amazement. And Tony, he stopped at the gates on his little walker frame and he held my arm and he said to me, "I can die happy now I've seen the manor." He had waited his whole life to come into the gardens and see the garden and various other people in the village, because when John died, the land got sold off, the gates were officially closed, and the people who lived here were farmers. So unless you actually worked on the farm, you didn't come in.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was only a select few who actually worked here actually knew about what went off. And because the age of the population of the village, they've got to be in their hundreds to know anything about John, even though John is buried in the church next door. Even though he's buried there. Really? I didn't even know he was buried there, because it happened all in the 18th century. So they had no idea. So social media has been massively important for me to get that story out there and tell the story of the house and gardens.
Yeah, because so many, everyone's heard of Sutton seeds and, lots of people still grow Sharp's potatoes. But, I've kind of never thought about the history. So obviously, I presume it's nothing to do with the family anymore, Sutton seeds. Would I be right?
Yeah. So obviously, Sutton's, that they belong to a different entity. That's all I'm going to say on that. But yeah, there's no more of that family. Same as the Sharp family I have found John Sharp's great-great-granddaughter. She's in Australia.
Ah, yeah. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
She was a nut farmer, which is brilliant.
Oh, great. She's still in the industry then. Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. But no, it's so important to tell these stories. It really, really is. And that social media really does give you that option to kind of reach out to so many more people. It's brilliant. And you tell the story beautifully. Sorry.
Yes, thank you. If you think about it in a logical sense, if it wasn't for these people in the 18th century, like John Sharp and the Suttons, we wouldn't actually grow what we grow today. Because, absolutely. The links with Sir Joseph Banks here, we wouldn't have been growing anything that we grow today, because they wouldn't have travelled and brought them back to this country. So it's massively important. And when we talk about Lincolnshire, we must talk about Sir Joseph Banks.
Well, I can see Phil's ears pricking up, because Phil, although not a gardener, he's getting more and more fascinated in horticulture and is reading more and more about Victorian plant hunters and all sorts of things, aren't you, Phil?
I am.
Would you mind just for Phil and maybe some of the listeners who don't know who Sir Joseph Banks is, just tell us a little bit about him and his connection to Lincolnshire.
So Yeah, of course. So Sir Joseph Banks, they owned lots of farmland around here in Lincolnshire, in Horncastle, where Jane lives, just down the road. There is actually a museum in Horncastle for Sir Joseph Banks. Now, Sir Joseph Banks was a magistrate, but he was also a botanist, and he was friends with John Sharp, because John Sharp also was a seedsman, a florist, and he was the Justice of Peace. And Sir Joseph Banks came here, and we don't know whether or not some of the species of trees we have here were seedlings from Sir Joseph Banks. We've still got to work that one out yet. But Sir Joseph Banks went on the Endeavour with Captain Cook, and he brought species back here to England and studied them. He started Kew Gardens, Chelsea Physic Gardens, so RHS. So he's massively important in what went off in horticulture in the 18th century. So there was a whole network. And then we have Charles Darwin. I'm just going to show you this picture. You're going to be blown away. So this picture was given to me. This is people sat outside the manor here. I don't know if you can
see. Is here.
Yeah, this is outside the back of the house. So John Sharp is there, the gentleman sat there with a beard.
Right.
And there's a gentleman in a top hat just here. And we're trying to work out if it's Charles Darwin.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That would be amazing.
Because Charles Darwin had land in Lincolnshire as well. So
I didn't know that.
You talk about Lincolnshire. Now I'm going to blow the trumpet for Lincolnshire, even though I wasn't born in Lincolnshire. I was born in Sheffield, South Yorkshire. Lincolnshire is one of the most important places for horticulture, because the Danish came here first with their tulips, because we have the fens, and the soil is so good here, sandy loamy soil, and it's so rich in nutrients that they came here to plant their tulips. So we have Taylor's bulbs, we have bells, peat beetle roses further down the road. We have all the big flower growers here in Lincolnshire. Right. And not only that, we grow lots of vegetables here as well. So this is why Sharp seeds were so big in the 18th century. They were the first people to sell seeds to America. I've got documents from their company turning over 1.2 million in the 18th century.
Oh, my word. Wow.
That's incredible. It's fascinating to hear all this. It really, really is. And we need to hear it. But I'm just going to change tack slightly, but it's to do with, you kind of mentioned Taylor's bulbs and everything else, because we are, we're very much an industry podcast rather than a gardening podcast. So you do have a few collaborations, don't you, with some of the kind of local industries in Lincolnshire. What are the incentives for yourself and for those companies to work with each other, would you say? How important is it to have collaborations?
Oh, it's massively important, Kate. So Taylor's Bulbs, we're bulbs.uk. We're actually sponsored by Taylor's, and Scott Press News this year, we've got the Narcissus from Chelsea going into the wall garden. So you'll be able to see all the varieties that they had at Chelsea. And they're going to, I've got to plant them yet. In the kitchen. So Taylor's have been brilliant, and when people come to the garden, they can then see the type of bulbs that Taylor's grow. You know, it's a local company based in Lincolnshire, and it's that connection. Because we have so many people come here, it's wonderful for them to see them in a natural setting rather than seeing them. So the companies, British Garden Centres, we do a lot of collaborations with them. Their Christmas advert was just filmed here. British Garden Centres are the same. So the front of the manor this year will be bulbs from Taylor's, bulbs.uk, but in collaboration with British Garden Centres. Even David Austin Roses. David Austin Roses helped us with the roses in the front of the gardens and in the kitchen garden as well. So it is massively important, because these companies have product placement here in the gardens, and then most of the gardening clubs and people who come here can actually see the flowers for themselves, smell them, touch them, and so on and so on.
Oh, so it's a great relationship. We actually had Taylor's Bulbs on the podcast, and fascinating story as well. You know, they've got a great legacy in Lincolnshire, haven't they, as well? Yeah. So your work, Sam, your work spans so many areas, from award-winning gardens, which I think we need to hear a little bit more about, don't we, Phil, to seed-saving workshops, to restoring this historical garden. What has been, would you say, the defining moment in your career so far?
Ooh, crikey. So you might find this slightly, obviously, you know, the garden's massive. It was massive doing a show garden and so on. But I would say it's been on the committee for the Hardy Plant Society for Lincolnshire. And people might be surprised by that. But when I moved here, the ladies, so Lincolnshire has the biggest group of members of all the groups of the Hardy Plant Society. We are the biggest cohort here in Lincolnshire.
Really?
Yeah, we have 300 and odd members. So we're huge. So when I came here, there's a few other big gardens in the area. And these ladies were members of the Hardy Plant Society, the Lincolnshire one. And they came to see me and officially passed their cap over to me to say, we are now closing our gardens because we've done it for 20 years plus. This is what you need to do in your garden. And they advised me on plants because obviously I'd never planted in this area before. They advised me on visitors, what to do and so on. So these ladies from the Hardy Plant Societies were the bones of helping me shape the gardens. And they were, you know, these ladies have been opening their gardens for 20 years plus. So I became a committee member for the Links Hardy Plant Society group. I do their newsletter, website, and, you know, are at the events and promote the group itself. And I don't know if you are members, but in the book, the national book, I'm also in there as well this month because I'm involved with the national group as well for doing the sponsors for the awards for next year. So the Hardy Plant Society has been, and it still is, it's a massive part of what I do because locally the people, the ladies and gentlemen who belong to these groups know so much about the plants in that area. And it's a fantastic group to join if you don't know much about gardening and plants. So I'm going to say I was more than honoured to become a committee member and to do what I'm doing with the Hardy Plant Society.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and I think that just plays into something which we seem to say almost every week, Kate, is that people in this industry, you know, are just so happy to share their knowledge.
And generous. And I love the fact that you said that being part of this kind of society has been your defining moment rather than something about just you. This is something about other people and kind of the industry, you know, horticulture and gardening. And that's just lovely to hear. And yeah, I echo what you say, Phil. It is just encouraging, isn't it? How kind of supportive everybody can be. Not everybody. There's the odd person out there. Mention no name. But generally, it's just lovely to hear. Yeah. It really is. So talking about different groups, you're also a member of the Garden Media Guild.
Yeah.
Does that kind of complement your hands-on work in horticulture, or are you just kind of, you just joined it because it's there?
No, so I joined the Garden Media Guild because obviously of what I'm doing here at the Manor and connecting to people, you know, in the industry to say to them, you know, this is what we're doing, what are the next steps, can you advise me on things? And the Guild has been absolutely superb. It's not just all about shows and doing, you know, things. You know, there's actually members in there who can guide you. So Steffi Shields is the first member from the Guild. And Steffi wrote an article on me year before, in the Lincolnshire Life magazine, and she named the article Seeds and Serendipity. She said it was fate that we were to find the gardens. So it's people like that, who the Kitchen Garden Network, who I belong to now, so the World Kitchen Garden Network. So it's people like that who I've been able to find through the Guild and connect with to help me on my journey here. So it's been so much more than, you know, glitzy parties and obviously, you know, events. It's the behind the scenes thing. Yeah, but they're good as well, you know.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
So there's the Garden Media Guild and there's the Chartered Institute of Horticulture. So I'm a member. And again, that then ties into what we're doing here because I've said, you know, previously that we're going to turn the Kitchen Moor Garden into a horticultural learning centre. And
tell us about this.
They will be the benchmark, you know, to help us to progress into that and get new gardeners in here and do training and so on.
Yeah, well, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that then? So that initiative that you're going to be doing in the Kitchen Garden, just tell us about that.
So in my very small spare time, I've been working with Sitting Girls as a Sitting Girls horticultural advisor. And the Sitting Girls qualifications are being rewrote. They're being redone to fit with the industry standards and to be modernised. So the Kitchen Wall Garden will be the first Sitting Girls horticultural learning centre where students will be able to come and do Sitting Girls level 2 and 3 and then go off into the industry and get a job. So Sitting Girls has kind of been overlooked for years. You know, everybody talks about RHS. RHS is fantastic, but the Sitting Girls ones, we can do a whole course in a week and have you qualified and have you here and done practical training.
It's really practical. With some of the RHS, it's quite theoretical as well. So yeah, because I used to work with young lads who weren't getting on at school. So they would come to a therapy garden I used to work in and they would do their Sitting Girls. And it's just such a brilliant thing. So it's great to see that you're taking on that initiative. It's going to be wonderful. What a place to learn as well.
And it is so exciting for what elements they're putting in the new qualifications for next year. So next year level 3 will be ready, then the year after it'll be level 2. So it's really exciting on what's going off. So I've been brought in to do certain units. So it's wonderful, and people will be able to come here and practically, the word is practically, work in the garden and then go away with a formal qualification and be able to get some kind of work in the industry.
Which is what we need. We absolutely need young people to be learning and get them into the industry.
Wonderful. I mean, we've just had such a blast hearing about the history of your manor and you know, of Lincolnshire now as well. And just generally, it's been really exciting to find out more about you and what you're doing there at Bardney Manor. But so we've got a couple of just fun questions to sort of help wind things up. So if you could save the seeds from any plant in the whole world, what plant would it be and why?
I think I'd answered this one earlier. It would be the common dog violet, the native Lincolnshire wildflower, because nobody sees it anymore. And it's such a beautiful specimen and, you know, native to this area.
So this might be the same answer as well, but do you have a plant or flower that will always bring a smile to your face and why?
Yeah, so that's roses. And that goes back to my dad, because my dad grew lots of roses. So my dad used to like the old ones like Superstar, Peace, Blue Moon, which I have in the garden here. I have his roses here. So it's roses, because as a child I used to make, you know, the perfume from the petals and everything else. So roses are always close to my heart, and they do bring a smile to anybody's face because they're such a beautiful, you know, flower and scent and look. So yeah, that has to be roses.
Lovely. Yeah, fantastic. So just want to say thank you so much, Sam, for giving up your time and talking to us today. It's been thoroughly educational and really enjoyable as well.
Well, Jane said you had a lot to say, and yeah, she was that was understating. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. No, it's been a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Bara, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobara.com.